I'm Alexia Gordon, author of the award-winning Gethsemane Brown Mysteries, published by Henry Press, and the host of the Cozy Corner podcast, part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Every other week, I chat with an author who writes novels on the not-so-gritty end of the crime fiction spectrum. If you prefer mystery without hardcore sex and violence, join us in the Cozy Corner. Welcome.
Hello, this is your host, Alexia Gordon, author of the Gethsemane Brown Mysteries. Joining me today in the Cozy Corner is CM, Colleen Gleason, author of the Lincoln's White House Mysteries, to chat about Murder at the Capitol, the newest in the series. Welcome, Colleen.
Thank you. Well, glad to be here.
Tell us a little about your Lincoln's White House series and about Murder in the Capitol.
So Murder at the Capitol is the third book in the series, and it does stand alone, although as with most series, you'll meet characters that you can tell have had some development in previous books. And so while the murder mystery itself, you know, is resolved in the book, people may want to, you know, take a look at earlier books to find out what happened with the characters to get them to this point. But the book itself takes place during a very specific time, about 5 days, right around 4th of July, 1861. As in each of the other books, the series is very historically based. So, as I said, this book takes place around July 4th, 1861, and the previous two books each take place during a certain time period. The first one begins during Lincoln's first inaugural ball, and the second book takes place right after the firing on Fort Sumter when war was officially declared. So I do a lot of research for these books, but I plop into the middle of this very specific time a murder mystery. And so all of my characters, the main characters, are all fictional, but they interact with many historical figures that will be familiar and some that won't be familiar to the reader, and in a very specific historical setting, in the White House at the time, in Washington, D.C. at the time, you know, right as the war was beginning, and deal with a lot of societal things, a lot of cultural things, things like fashion and what, you know, people were like as far as getting along with each other in Washington at the time. So it's really a fun time period, and hopefully each mystery not only is interesting to the reader, but they also learn about some of the time period that maybe they didn't know.
And for those of us who aren't up on our Civil War history, did anything other than it being Independence Day specific happen on July 4th, 1861?
That was when Congress was reconvening, and they were convening for the first time since war had been declared. And what happens in this book, at the very beginning of the book, is Congress is coming in on actually July 5th, so it was the day after, and a body is found hanging from the scaffolding or the crane that was inside the Capitol Dome, which was currently being rebuilt. They had put on additions to the Capitol building on each end, and they had to make the dome bigger in order to balance the building. And so instead of putting a scaffolding around the outside of the building to build the dome, the engineer came up with this unusual idea of putting a crane that sat on the floor of the rotunda and went up through the top of the open Capitol, or the dome. And so they come in the morning and they find a body hanging from this crane. And of course, back in 1861, there's no, you know, CSI, there's no forensics, there's very little, you know, that they can determine, that they can use to determine whether, you know, how this death happened. It looks like suicide. It looks like the person took his life. But as the story goes on, it becomes clear that that is not the case.
And what inspired you to set your series in Civil War era Washington, D.C.?
Well, actually, it was an idea that was suggested to me, and the idea was actually that Lincoln should be an amateur detective solving mysteries in Washington while he was president. And I didn't really jump on that idea itself because I thought, you know, Lincoln's going to be a little too busy running the country, dealing with a war. He had a wife and two children that were living in the White House with him at the time. And I thought he didn't really have time to do that. But I thought it was a great location, like time period, and a great location for a murder mystery series. And so I created a fictional character to become the amateur detective, who is actually a close family friend of Mr. Lincoln. So he's someone that Lincoln trusts. And so therefore I was able to bring in the Lincoln element, maybe more so than in another historical, you know, if I hadn't done a close family friend. And so that was kind of how that happened. And since then I've learned so much about Lincoln that I didn't know about the Civil War, about what it was like to live in the White House and in Washington, D.C. at the time. It's been really amazing. You know, everybody knows enough about the Civil War to be dangerous, but hopefully if people read these books, they'll learn more than they ever thought they would. Even some of the people who are Civil War buffs are reading the books and are asking me, wow, did Clara Barton really do rifle shooting practice on the National Mall? And the answer is yes, she did.
And describe the research that you did to find out these things that or go beyond what we hear just in the history books.
Well, there's, as one can imagine, there are millions of books about the Civil War, and there are books about every kind of minuscule topic of the Civil War, as well as very broad ones. On my bookshelf, I currently have a book only about Lincoln and the food he ate. I have a book about African-American medicine during the Civil War. One of my main characters is a Black doctor, a man who's a Black doctor, a free man. I have books about the press and Lincoln, how they got along, because one of my characters is a wannabe journalist. And that's for background. And I also have very broad books that are about the Civil War, you know, in general. And one of the very well-known books that was written, I believe it was put together in maybe the 1950-ish. It's called Reveille in Washington, I believe is the title. And it really breaks down very specifically everything that was happening in Washington, D.C. pretty much every day during the Civil War, at least during the beginning of the Civil War. So I use that as a base. Then I also use newspapers from the time. I can pull up some of the newspapers in Washington, also New York City and other major cities to see what they were reporting and the kinds of things that they were talking about. I have a whole book that is based, that was set, that has information about the 5 days that they were holed up, that the president and his family and his supporters were holed up in the White House after the firing on Fort Sumter when they were waiting for troops to come in from the north. There's an entire book just about those 5 to 6 days. So again, I start with the broad, and then as I drill down onto the time period of each book, because as I said, it takes place over a certain time period, I drill down to exactly what was happening on those days. And so I can really fill in a lot of details. I've used some journals. In fact, in this book, Murder at the Capitol, we spend some time at the patent office, and one of the actual murder victim works at the patent office. So we spend some time there as we're investigating the murder. And I have a journal of a patent investigator who would write about living in Washington at the time, but also about his job. So I'm able to get some real specific information from that kind of source as well.
You mentioned that one of your characters is a wannabe journalist. That character is actually a female. Were there many female journalists in that time period?
No, there weren't. And yes, she is a female. She's recently come to Washington from New York City. She is the fictional niece of Dr. Joseph Henry, who was the director of the Smithsonian Institute at the time. And he lived in the Smithsonian Castle with his wife and daughters. So I decided to give him a fictional niece so I could have a character living in the Smithsonian Castle, because I thought that would be very fun. But no, there were not a lot of female journalists at the time. And those that were relegated to writing about fashion and housekeeping and things like that. And Sophie Gates, that's her name, she really wants to, you know, write about the war, and she wants to write about politics. She wants to write about, quote, you know, kind of manly things. And when we first meet her, she's actually dressed as a man trying to get access so she could write a good story. So far, though, you know, we're three books into the series, and she's not really having a lot of success in her journalism career. And I'm wondering if maybe she's not as good of a writer as she thinks she is, but she's finding other ways to support the war effort, and she's finding other ways to make herself useful. And I'm thinking that she's going to have maybe an unusual arc, and she may not end up doing exactly what she thought she would end up doing, as many of us do.
Now, how do you balance including enough historical detail to give readers a good sense of what wartime Washington was like without adding so much detail that it bogs down the story?
I try to keep it balanced, and I hope I succeed in not bogging it down too much. I think that my technique, if you will, is to, you know, whenever I'm describing a scene, it's automatically going to include details of what it's like living in this time and in this place while I'm, you know, sharing clues or information about characters. So I think it becomes inherent in the scenes. You know, it does double duty is what I'm saying. But additionally, I do have scenes where my main character, Adam Quinn, who, as I mentioned, is a close family friend of Lincoln and has been kind of identified by President Lincoln as his sort of murder investigator, because at the time they had no detectives. They really didn't even have a police force in Washington City at the time. So there wasn't anybody to look into these issues. So when he interacts with Lincoln, or he is in a scene where Lincoln is speaking to maybe his generals or his cabinet members, all of that is very word for word what has been reported in the history books and the newspapers and in, you know, by other journals, by people living in the White House, very accurate. So we get a little bit more probably of politics and history in those scenes that Lincoln is actually in with his cabinet members. Whereas while my amateur detective is doing his investigation, we get more of the day-to-day life, what it's like. So I kind of feel like I try and balance it that way.
What are some of the challenges that you faced in fictionalizing real people like President Lincoln?
Well, whenever I do a talk or an interview, I'm always half hoping that there won't be any huge Lincoln experts in the audience or Civil War experts, because I'm always, you know, a little concerned that I'm going to make a mistake, because there are so many people who do love Lincoln and who know about the Civil War. I do my very best to make sure that everything in my books are as accurate and historically accurate as possible. But of course, people make mistakes. So writing a character like Lincoln, who's really well known, who's been portrayed so many times in so many ways, who's had so many books written about him, and putting him in a fictional setting is a challenge. So what I try to do, again, is anything that he actually says that's related to the war or politics or running the country are things that I've found in documentation that he has said, and I try to make them as you know, accurate word for word as possible, the way they've been reported. And it's usually in more than one source that they're saying, you know, these words that he said. When he's interacting, for example, with Adam or Sophie or George Hilton, who's the doctor, you know, he's going to be talking to them about things that weren't real. So I just try and give him the voice that I've discovered that he has when he's in a private or more relaxed situation, reading his biography, reading journals from people who knew him, you know, on a casual basis, not necessarily on a political basis, has given me an idea of what his personality was like. He was very lewd, liked to make off-color jokes, loved to tell stories. He did not have great grammar. In fact, I've had editors tweak some of his speech to make the grammar more accurate than he would normally speak. For example, he would often say, "I heard that we were going, you know, that we were going to get another shipment of guns." And of course we would say, "I heard." So he wasn't always, you know, he had these wonderful speeches, but in day-to-day speech, he was not always as grammatically correct as we might imagine basing it on his speeches. So bottom line is I just tried very hard to make him as realistic as possible without giving him speeches that wouldn't fit his character from what I have been able to learn.
And do you push back at the editors who try and tweak things to clean it up and say, no, it shouldn't be that way?
I have done that. I did agree with them on the heard part, only because I didn't want people to think it was a typo, because that could be construed as a typo. But other ones where he would say ain't or I reckon, you know, we definitely left those in. So, you know, just trying to balance between, oh, we don't want people to think this is a typo or an error, as opposed to, you know, what would obviously not be an error. So, yeah. I did have, you know, because especially in Murder at the Capitol, you know, obviously with the series taking place during the Civil War, there is the racism issue and the slavery issue is everywhere. And having one of my main characters being a free black man who's a doctor, and he acts as kind of the post-mortem doctor in this series, which of course is a whole nother issue. A black man basically cutting up and examining white people who are, you know, murder victims has an issue all in itself. But I have had some question from editors about some of the racist words that were used by the people at the time and whether we wanted to include them in the book. And I felt that to be historically accurate, if people were speaking in racist terms, I was going to use those words. Fortunately, my main characters are more inclusive than maybe your average person in Washington at the time. So we don't see a lot of it, but we do see some of the negative racist words used throughout the books when appropriate.
Have you gotten pushback from readers on that?
I have not at this point. I hope that that they're used in such a way that it's clear that they're being used by people who, you know, are racist, and they're not just being used judiciously. Like I don't use them in the narrative. It's only in speech or in someone's very internal thought, if it is even there. So it is there. They are, the usage of those words is very judicious and very purposeful. Kind of like using, you know, the F word or you know, other words that might, you know, not be well received. There are no F words in these books, however.
Did people use the F word then?
They did. Oh, it's a very old word actually, and it really didn't have the connotations that it has now. As you know, the F word is like, oh my gosh, you shouldn't use the F word. It's the word that makes a movie be rated R. But it was a very earthy, well-known, common word from, I don't know, like the 15, 1600s. So it was very common, which is why I find it amusing that it's, you know, considered so inappropriate today.
Now, you mentioned that some of your characters are racist and they behave like racists, and you have a character who is wannabe journalist, you have a black doctor, you have real historical characters, you have your main character, and your book alternates points of view. So what are some of the challenges of getting into the heads of so many different characters?
You know, it's, I actually find it fun to get into different characters' heads, and I try to, when I'm writing in different characters' heads, so I do write in Sophie's head, who's the journalist, George Hilton, who's the doctor, Adam Quinn, who's the main detective, and then I also have Constance LeMain, who is a Southern belle, who is a racist. It's very clear. She doesn't realize who she is, but she is a racist. So when I'm in their heads, they're thinking and speaking the way I think that they would think and speak. I find it fun because each one of them does think differently, and the way their words come out, like their thoughts come out in their head, is different. And I try to keep it specific to where they are at that moment, what they're doing and what their surrounding is and what their background is. So, you know, George Hilton, the doctor, when he's examining the body, he's always going to be thinking in medical terms. You know, the femur has been, you know, fractured and we've got abrasions here. And Adam Quinn's going to be like, the thigh bone's broken, you know, when he's got cuts. And so everybody is always in their specific point of view. And Sophie, you know, and Constance, they're going to notice fashions. They're going to notice fabrics. They're going to notice colors, maybe in a different way that other characters might not. So it's always very specific. In fact, in the first book, the murder is partly solved because of a fashion, a clue related to fashion. That's all I'm going to say. So,
And what's next for Adam and Sophie and George and Constance and President Lincoln?
Murder at the Smithsonian is my next planned book. I'll be working on that hopefully sometime later this year. I figure it's time we have a murder happening at the castle. I was very lucky. Last May, I was in Washington, D.C. for a conference, and I was able to get a private guided tour of the Smithsonian Castle by the curator of the museum, and he took me into the areas where the Henry family lived, even though they've been completely redone. It's completely different. They've moved walls and everything, but I got to see where they lived, and I got to see the basement, and I got to see a lot of areas of the actual castle that are not open to the public, so that gives me a lot of fodder for having a dead body be found there somewhere, somehow.
And will readers learn something about the early days of museum curation, which has changed dramatically, I imagine, since the Civil War era?
Indeed. Oh, I expect that they will. It should be very much fun. In the first book, we actually find out about a group of naturalists who live in the castle as well, and they have a kind of brotherhood fraternity, and they meet often, and they have big wild parties at night. So I'm thinking we're going to have more of that happening, even though it's the Civil War. So, you know, they got to do something to blow off steam during the evening when they're not, you know, being called up to war.
And where can readers buy a copy of Murder at the Capitol?
Pretty much anywhere books are sold. It's going to be available in hardcover, ebook, audiobook, and large print. And the book comes out on the 28th of January, and it's available, you know, pretty much anywhere you can find a book, either online or any of the retailers, both independent and chain.
And where can readers find out more about you?
The best way to find me, even though the books are written under the name C.M. Gleason, is to look on my main website, Colleen Gleason. Also, all of my social media is under Colleen Gleason. So Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, my website, ColleenGleason.com. They can reach me in any of those ways.
Well, thank you for joining me today, Colleen.
Thank you very much for having me. And I appreciate what you're doing with the Cozy Podcast. I love it.
Oh, thank you very much. And try and stay safe and warm and dry in this terrible weather that's going on while we're recording this.
Absolutely. You too.
And this has been your host, Alexia Gordon, author of the Gethsemane Brown Mysteries, chatting with Colleen Gleason, who writes as C.M. Gleason, author of The Murder at the Capitol, the latest in the Lincoln's White House Mysteries from Kensington. Thank you for listening. Until next time, goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Cozy Corner Podcast, part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I'm Alexia Gordon, author of The Gethsemane Brown Mysteries and the host of the podcast. Tune in next time as I chat with another author writing on the lighter side of crime. Until then, goodbye.